come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What an end zone punt. Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. That guy is Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk with you for the next hour to talk some New York Giants football and take your calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chat on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Hope everybody had a great weekend. You survived the cold. You're surviving the snow today. We are ready to roll, and the combine is now less than a week away. The players will arrive on Thursday. The workouts begin in earnest on Thursday afternoon, and then on Friday, you get the offensive linemen continuing, skill position guys on Saturday to try to get those ratings, which the NFL Network is obviously looking for. Then you get the defensive players on Sunday and Monday. And Lance, I guess we should start with this only because I know we're going to get some calls on it very quickly. The New York Post, I wouldn't call it a breaking news story this morning, but in a Steve Serby column, he mentions that according to sources, the Giants intend to put the non-exclusive franchise tag on Jason Pierre-Paul. That means he can negotiate with other teams, but they would have to spend two first-round picks in order to sign him. If he does play with the Giants this year on the franchise tag, that tag is in the area of $14.6, $14.8 million. So that's right now where the Giants stand. The Giants obviously do not comment on this sort of thing. That is not official Giants news by any means, but the report is out there. So, Lance, we should talk about that very quickly, and then we will get to the Giants' safety and offensive line needs in free agency and the draft shortly. But first on Jason Pierre-Paul, Lance, in terms of this report for the New York Post, which, again, Giants are not confirming, simply a report out there that they do intend to put the non-exclusive franchise tag on him. And to me, this is all part of the negotiating process. To me, it's not a big deal. The Giants don't want him taken away from them. I don't think if they had their preference, he would play under that huge number of the franchise tag this year. They still want to work out a long-term contract with him that works for him and the team at the right number.
It's a form of protection, as you just alluded to, John. I think what a lot of people need to understand, and this is not just for the Giants, it's for everybody, by giving a player the franchise tag, that doesn't mean that they're going to play under that tag throughout the course of the season. What can happen is, after the window in which teams have to designate the players they want to use the franchise tag on, they then have another window to get a long-term deal done. For example, Jimmy Graham and the Saints, that involved the franchise tag. Then they had the window to negotiate a long-term deal, and they wound up coming to an agreement after it was decided that he was going to be a tight end versus a wide receiver. They don't have to worry about that with respect to JPP, but hypothetically, even if the Giants were to give him the tag, that would, number one, protect them from other teams coming into the mix, because no team, John, at the end of the day, wants to sacrifice two first-rounders for any player in this league.
Not.
So that's why it really comes down to protection, and then you have a few weeks to perhaps hammer out a long-term deal, and then you don't have to worry about that number perhaps hurting you in other areas to sign other free agents.
And again, according to some of those websites out there, and again, this is not Giants information, you know, the Giants have probably just under $20 million to spend, and you know, you have to save some of that for your rookie class.
Yeah.
So you basically have your rookie class allotment, then if you put the 15 on JPP, give or take, that's basically it. You have no money left. Now, the Giants can free up money in other ways, and, you know, you've seen the reports about how they can do that. But this is a deal where you have a player that's young in his prime years, that's been very productive. This, to me, is the ideal scenario. And these are the type of players that Giants try to bring in free agency. So why not try to keep one of your own that's in his prime years, has great years ahead of him, has been productive here, wants to be here? It makes sense to work out a long-term deal.
Absolutely, especially when you're bringing back Steve Spagnuolo, who thrives with the pass rush. And JPP, while his numbers have fluctuated during the course of his career, he had a nice late surge last season, and they're going to look to build off of that, assuming that everybody stays healthy and they can complement him with other weapons.
And we'll see what the Giants do with that. The franchise tag window opened up on Monday, so you're going to see some moves in this regard moving forward. And I think around the league, you're going to see a decent amount of players get franchised. Justin Houston is a big-time pass rusher that
Chiefs.
You could see from the Chiefs. That could get franchised, and we'll see what other players, you know, Dez Bryant perhaps in the division, maybe even Jeremy Maclin in Philadelphia is a guy they could consider putting the franchise tag on. So a lot of players out there that we could see the tag get put on over the course of the next week or so.
Dallas, I would say, probably is a unique team compared to the rest of them, John, given you have DeMarco Murray and Dez Bryant, who are impending free agents. So they're going to have to make some tough decisions, assuming they want to keep both, unlike other teams who probably just have one home run guy that they have to worry about taking care of.
Now, they still have that transition tag, right? So they have that, like, secondary smaller tag they can put on Murray.
I
think that's still there, right?
Correct. And with the transition tag, just to clarify for the audience, once you use that, you have to then wait for the duration of that contract to expire before you can use the transition tag again. Now, the Giants have used the transition tag before, but they haven't used it recently, so they're not in that ballpark. It's very convoluted when it comes to the language of the NFL CBA, but the transition tag is another form of protection for a team. The difference is the franchise tag you could use 17 years consecutively.
Correct.
Transition tag, once you use it on a player, that player's contract has to come to an end, then it recycles, you could use it again.
And I think that gives you the right to match, but there's no draft pick compensation,
correct,
if
exactly.
I recall something like that. So there are options out there for these teams, but these are the type of moves you're going to see as teams get prepared for free agency, which starts the second week of March, which is about 3 or 4 weeks away. So as they're getting ready for the draft and the combine, which is going to be their big focus this weekend, they are working on this stuff on the side for free agency as well. And Lance, as we've spoken about after the year and over the course of the last month or month and a half or so, two of the big needs for the Giants this offseason that they're going to try to get better at are offensive line and safety. Let's start with the offensive line first, since that's a big thing that a lot of fans have talked about. And I think the important thing to stress here, for me at least, while help is needed, I think most of the improvement in the Giants' offensive line this year is going to come from within. It's going to come from Jeff Schwartz being healthy for a full year. He was their big free agent addition in 2014, didn't play.
Yeah.
You're going to get improvement from Justin Pugh in his third year. That's going to help you. You're going to get improvement from Weston Richburg in his second year, perhaps moving back to center as natural position. I think that will help your offensive line. So while they still might add people, and I think they will add another player that could potentially be a starter at some point, to me, a lot of the improvements here is going to come from Schwartz getting healthy and the younger guys getting better.
Now, I would be surprised if they went the route like they did last season, where you bring in a number of free agents and you just try to throw in some new faces, because there's continuity here, John. The key is, can this group stay healthy? You have youth. You've invested a few draft picks in guys who have proven to be starters.
A one and a two.
Correct. So you've taken care of that. And at the same time, you've complemented those moves, John, by throwing in Jeff Schwartz. The problem with Jeff Schwartz is, unfortunately, he got struck by the injury bug. Yep. And when he came back, he got hurt again. So the anticipation is he'll come back, he'll be full health, and he's been talking about this on Twitter that the rehab process is going along, so he's obviously animated and excited to get back for OTAs. And if you could solidify one guard spot with him, then perhaps, do you have an opening with guard? Do you move Pugh around? I mean, these are the other types of questions that I think are going to come to the forefront during the course of the offseason.
Well, to me, that's great flexibility. You know, you got Pugh that can play multiple positions. You have Jeff Schwartz that can also play multiple positions. I would like to see Schwartz wind up on the right side, whether that's at right guard or right tackle. I don't think it matters. Schwartz made it clear last year he's more comfortable playing on the right side. Both Tom Coughlin and Jerry spoke about Weston Richburg long-term being a center, so I think that's where he's going to eventually wind up. Is Pugh better at tackle or guard? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. No one's ever seen Justin Pugh play guard before. So I think that's a move they would make with caution. I think best case scenario, they'd prefer to leave him out there just because they know what they got. But if you go out there and you find you're getting the best player at the best value at right tackle, you know what? You can go out there and do it, because you think Justin Pugh is good enough to move in and play either left guard or right guard, wherever you want to put him. And that, to me, is a bonus. And this is, you know, Paul Dottino, he talks about this all the time. Position flexibility on the offensive line is huge. It really does help.
Absolutely.
Look what I mean, you love Kevin Booth. You spoke about Kevin Booth for years. He plays everywhere. It's so helpful.
Mr. Versatility.
Yeah, exactly.
You like guys. Well, I mean, for example, they were banking on Jeff Schwartz playing 16 games last season, John. He goes out. My favorite word, the game of musical chairs begins. So, you know, you want to try to prevent that. But if you have to go the route of musical chairs, at least you have guys that have experience playing multiple positions.
Yeah.
Zach Martin, we've heard his name come up so much over the last few weeks, and a lot of the experts are saying, you know, you'd like to find another Zach Martin in this class. And what's unique about him, and the reason I'm bringing up, is number one, he's a recent young guy, and number two, he plays within the division. Remember, when the Cowboys drafted him, his experience out of college was tackle. Then they decided to move him around and convert him to a guard. It worked out. Does it always work with every prospect? No, but if you can sense that you can get versatility out of an offensive lineman, even if you're set at that position, I think there's value, John, because it gets back to you never know when the injury bug is going to hit, and you may have to slide a guy into a position where you didn't pencil him in at the beginning of the season, but at least he has experience on his resume there.
Well, and that's a good transition, I think, to the draft here, Lance. And right now, there seems to be only one top 10 offensive lineman that's getting mentioned a lot. Andres Pete has kind of been on the, you know,
borderline.
Top 15, maybe not top 10, between 10 and 15 early teens. But the one guy that's mentioned in the first 10 picks of this draft has been Brandon Scherff. He's been compared to Zach Martin, but Mike Mayock came out with his top five players at each position. Despite the fact Brandon Scherff played left tackle at Iowa, he projects him as a guard. Very similarly, he said last year Zach Martin probably would wind up being a guard. Not that they wouldn't be good tackles, but they could be great guards. And you see Zach Martin all pro in his first year. So you have a guy like Scherff that could either play right tackle, move into guard. It seems to fit to a lot of Giant fans. He has that blue-collar, mean, yeah, nasty type of demeanor, that road grader, the grinder. He's going to pancake people. It seems to fit what the Giants are looking for. But to me, there's no guarantee that you go offensive line in the first round here. In fact, this is the point I kind of made last week. I'm not sure, Lance, you're in a position where you can not address it in free agency and say, oh, we'll take a rough offensive line in the draft. I'm not sure if you're in a position where you can go into the draft and say, well, I have to get a starting caliber offensive lineman. That's how you get yourself into a corner here, and you get trapped into a bad position.
Well, plus, if you look at the track record of the team, John, Weston Richburg was an early second-round pick last year, and he turned into a starting offensive lineman. So they don't necessarily have to go a top-10 pick to get a starting offensive lineman. I think we've seen guys in the later rounds pan out, and it also depends on what takes place with respect to free agency. Because safety, which is another position we're going to talk about, if you looked at Giants' needs, you know, offensive line, you always want depth there, given what transpired over the course of the season. Safety, though, on paper appears to be the biggest need, only because there could be so much movement from a free agency standpoint. John, three of your four safeties who were in the mix last season could test the market.
Yeah, and to me, where you have to get better on the offensive line is run blocking. You have to get better against the run, and there are a lot of pretty good tackles out there. Lance, Brian Belaga is a guy from Green Bay that's out there. Michael Orr was let go.
Yeah.
I think he's a bigger name than he is actually production based on what he's done the last couple years in the league, so I'm not someone that gets very excited about that. You got Iapati from the 49ers, who's a big name that's out there, Orlando Franklin from the Broncos. Those are the two top guards in the market. So the Giants will have some options and decide how much they want to spend, where they want to go. But I agree with you. Safety, to me, is perhaps the single biggest need, only because the only two guys you have under contract right now are Nat Burhe, who's a young player that people like, but can he play as a starter in the NFL? I don't think anybody knows that. Cooper Taylor hasn't stayed healthy in the 2 years he's been in the NFL. Roll's a free agent. Stevie Brown's a free agent. Quentin Dempsey's a free agent. So where do the Giants go here? And, you know, they're going to have to fill two and maybe three holes at safety, depending on how these young guys fare and improve over the course of the offseason.
I think you have some upside as the two players that you just mentioned. Burhe's very young. Taylor has upside. The problem is, you know, can he finally stay healthy? Durability, I think, is at least a word that comes to mind when you think about Cooper Taylor. He got hurt in training camp, and obviously he was immediately placed on IR. So they would like to see him prove that he could stay healthy over the course of a span of a few months. So that brings to the forefront, you know, you may want some veteran presence depending on who comes back. The three players that you threw out who are free agents, all those guys have some years underneath their belt. Stevie Brown has been, you know, around with a few teams, but he's got experience. Quentin Demps, special team safety, and it goes without saying that Antrel Roll, it's not just experience, but it's also a veteran leader in your locker room that you have to weigh with respect to what he's brought to the table. And Antrel Roll has been very good in terms of durability, too, which is something that needs to always be evaluated when you look at free agency.
And the other issue you run into, at least according to what a lot of the experts out there are saying, this is not a very deep safety class in terms of the draft. You're looking at one first-round safety in Landon Collins, maybe two second-round safeties, and who knows if those guys are going to be able to be starters. So you're not looking at a lot of safeties in this draft where you're going to get one the third or the fourth round, even potential to start them. And then in free agency, it's not considered a particularly deep class either. I mean, Kirk Coleman's a guy from the Chiefs that a lot of people talk about that they think – can help somebody. Anchor Roll is considered one of the top safety free agents for sure.
And he should be.
And he should be, no question about it. Both Landrys are out there, DeJuan and LaRon. So if people have interest in them.
The Colts just let LaRon Landry go.
Correct. Brandon Merriweather, the walking human fine, is out there if you want him.
How about the walking human injury? Talk about injuries.
Number two.
When was the last time, John, he played 16 games?
No question about it.
10 games.
No, 100%. Major Wright's a guy from the Bucks that people recognize his name. I mean, there just are not a lot of – and Devin McCourty, the one from the Patriots, who's obviously a big-name converted cornerback that's good in coverage. So – there's not a lot out there at safety, and a lot of people, you know, and I've gotten calls back and forth on Roll, people kind of leaning both ways on it. To me, and I think the Giants look at it this way, he's a guy where they know what they have. John Mara and Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin all said we'd love to have Anchor Roll back. And I think they will work hard with him to figure out a number where, you know, both sides can be happy, it works for both sides, and he can be back here. And then you figure out what you're going to do for safety number two based on whoever you go in free agency or the draft. But I think based on what's out there, I think safety is one of the really the big spots where the Giants have to focus. And Roll loves it here, and you know that. You know, we've both talked to him a bunch of times. He wants to be a Giant. And the Giants aren't unhappy with him either, at least if you go by what Jerry Reese, Tom Coughlin, and John Mara said in their postseason press conferences. So, to me, it makes sense for them to try to bring him back at a number that works for him and the team.
Oh, and as you mentioned, that's what pretty much everybody's been echoing during the course of the offseason. I think Anchor Roll, he also needs to look at where he is during the course of his career, John. I think he likes the stability that he's received from this organization. And at this point, the number one goal is to continue to win. You know, he's been in this league already.
Yeah.
He's been around. He's had a number of individual accolades. Usually when players get towards the latter part of their career, they want stability and they want to be able to feel comfortable and have the best opportunity to win. And, you know, there's a number of young players that have been infused into this roster. It's also important to have that veteran voice. And if they can make the number work, you know, there's great value, I still think, within Antrel Roll. And considering he's considered one of the best free agents out there, and there's injuries connected to a lot of the other guys, you know, these are the other types of things that the Giants are going to have to weigh when they start to attack that position.
And Roll made it clear on Sirius the other week that he would like to be back. So that's something to keep an eye on. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We've kept you waiting long enough. Let's get to the calls and start with Oren in Virginia. Oren, what's going on? Good afternoon.
Hello, John and Lance. I just want to ask the question, what is the strongest position in the draft this year, this man?
You know what? It might actually be running back. There's a lot of people that consider this an extremely strong running back draft. You can get a starting running back in as late as the third round, maybe even early fourth. So from what I understand, and you know, after the combine, Oren, this might change, running back is actually one of the strongest spots in this draft. Wide receiver is also very good, and the defensive line is another place where this draft is very, very heavy. You could get as many as 10 or 12 defensive linemen or, you know, hybrid 3-4 pass rushers go in the first round of the draft this year.
Yeah, because Jerry Reese, I remember hearing Paul saying that Jerry Reese only takes the best player on the board. That's what the Giants need. He just takes the best player. And I think we really strongly do need a receiver, even though we have Victor Cruz. I remember before he even got hurt, he wasn't really doing that well, like the Victor Cruz that we knew from 2011 and stuff, because I used to see him drop passes with just catches that he usually catches and stuff. And I'm not saying get a receiver first. I'm talking like a second-round, third-round pick. And we need another pass rush, because watching that Dallas game, Tony Romo had, like, I don't know, like 11 seconds in the pocket.
Well, Oren, I don't disagree with you, and I have no problem using a mid-round pick and a wide receiver, especially because this is actually the last year of Ruben Randle's contract as well, so they have to figure out what they're going to do with him. But I don't think you can use a first or second rounder on a wide receiver, to be honest with you, only because, Lance, and I kind of talked about this, Oren, you have a lot of resources you've put into wide receiver. A first-round pick in Beckham, a big contract in Cruz, a second-round pick in Randle. You have to start reinforcing the rest of your team. Look at why you lost games last year. Even after Cruz got hurt, wasn't your passing attack good enough when Beckham came on the last five or six games of the year? I think it was. I think you have to strengthen the trenches where this team struggled last year. And in regards to the pass rush, you mentioned that Cowboys game. Remember, Robert Ayers got hurt in that game. He wasn't in that game at the end of that contest, and Romo had all that time. If you go into next year with JPP playing like he did the last six games, Robert Ayers, DeMontre Moore, and Kerry Wynn coming on, I think you're in decent shape in terms of rushing off the edge here, to be honest with you.
And then plus Jonathan Hankins on the inside,
yeah,
who had a tremendous 2014 campaign, and Jay Bromley, who's also a young guy that's very active and energetic to get into the mix more. So I've always said I think there's depth on this roster. Health is obviously the number one indicator, but who can predict health when it comes to
no one can
lasting through OTAs, training camp in the regular season? It's impossible to do that. And Oren, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And it's funny, because on Giants.com, we have put up the experts and who they project the Giants perhaps taking with the first-round pick. And one guy actually pinpointed a wide receiver, that being Peter Schrager of Fox Sports, pointing to Devontae Parker out of Louisville, who has height, has tremendous amount of upside and versatility. But I would agree with John's sentiments that, you know, you've got depth there. If you want to take somebody in the later rounds who could be a young complement, who can at least become a starter, if Randall were to leave in free agency or somebody got hurt, that makes sense. I don't know if you really want to aggressively try to get another first-round pick at wide receiver when you've got so many playmakers on the roster right now who could do plenty of damage. Plus, don't forget Larry Donnell, too, who's clearly in the Giants' plans moving forward. It's not just about the wide receivers. It's also about the tight ends and the running backs that they've brought in. Between all of those positions, I think there's more than enough weapons on offense right now.
I would tend to agree. 201-939-4513. Nick in New Jersey is next. Nick, what's going on?
Hey, John. Lance, how you guys doing? It's been a long time since I called in.
How are you, Nick?
How's everything?
Good, good. John, real quick. Last week you mentioned Jason Avant, but my question was, how about a guy like Torrey Smith coming in? Might be not as expensive.
You don't think Torrey Smith's going to be expensive?
Not as much as Jason Avant.
Oh, Torrey Smith's going to make twice the money Jason Avant is. What, are you kidding me?
You really think so?
Oh, yeah. Torrey Smith is a big playmaker. You can probably get Jason Avant a little bit over the veteran minimum. He can be a guy that can play the slot, you know, be a possession receiver, block a little bit. Torrey Smith's getting a four-year, $20 million offer from somebody. He had 11 touchdowns last year.
Nick, I think you got to look at where they are on the depth chart. Jason Avant, at this point in his career, he's a third, fourth complimentary wide receiver.
He's 30 years old. Yeah.
Torrey Smith, he's a legitimate number one
prime.
And number two.
Yeah.
He's the guy that lined up opposite Steve Smith. And granted, his numbers weren't anything to write home about this season because Steve Smith ate up a lot of the receptions based on Gary Kubiak's type of offense, but I don't think teams are going to be turned off. His numbers previously, he was a guy that stretched the field, a very dangerous vertical weapon.
One of the best deep threats in the league.
Right. And the other thing I got to say is I've listened the last couple of weeks. I'm really getting tired of everybody saying that Troll's got that Antoine Roll's got to go. He's the leader of the defense. He's the voice of the defense. And he made the Pro Bowl in 2013. That's when he had help. He didn't have help this year. Everybody was hurt.
No, look, Nick, I agree. I think if Roll gets better players around him and he can play his position the way he likes to play it, I think he'll be a much better player than he showed last year. Look, he said himself that he wasn't happy with how he played last year, but I think a lot of that, Lance, had to do with the fact that the guys around him at corner, at linebacker, at safety were changing all the time.
Game of musical chairs at every other position, it seemed like last season. Think about all the top corners that wound up going down due to injury and guys who were shifted from the outside to the inside. So, you know, the safety is important to set the tone on the back end of the defense. It's one thing to be working with the usual suspects every week. Now, when you bring in guys middle of the season, remember, who were brought in at corner, all of a sudden learning the system, trying to get adjusted to the guys lining up next to you, that even can impact the play of a veteran. So that can't necessarily be overlooked. And I think that's a great point that Nick just alluded to.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to say is, if we got rid of Stevie Brown and Quentin Demps and kept Roll, could we afford to bring a guy in like Devin McCourtney or no?
I don't think you can bring in too higher price safety just because of the salary cap. Look, you can do whatever you want, and you can figure out a way, but I think it would hamstring you in other ways. I think you can give Burhey a chance to try to compete for a starting spot and see what happens, but I would like to have a veteran there just in case he struggles in year number two claiming that spot. I would like another guy that has experience, not a star necessarily or Pro Bowler like a McCourty, because McCourty's probably going to get, you know, $6, $7, $8 million a year based on his play the last couple of years. But I think you bring in a veteran at a lower cost to be a safety valve in case Nat Burhey doesn't develop the way you would like him to.
All right, and the last thing, John, talking about running backs, like the other caller just said, bringing in another guy, because we all know that one of them can't stay healthy, is it better to look in free agency or in the later rounds of the draft?
Well, I think you should look at all of your options, depending on who's out there. I don't have the list in front of me in terms of free agency, but I do know some of the top prospects in terms of the young guys. You have Melvin Gordon, who set just about every NCAA record. You have a number of upside at the running back position
in terms
of the young guys. Todd Gurley, injury-plagued player, though, keep in mind.
Only one injury.
Out of Georgia. I'd be concerned, though, he's coming off of that injury.
I agree.
So I think needs to be taken into consideration.
If he's healthy, though, to me, he's no doubt the number one best running back on the board.
Well, versatility, too. I mean, he's a guy that's so dynamic in open space. You definitely have to consider it. But I wouldn't necessarily go for the home run with my first-round pick. I think he's a guy that you could settle down in the later rounds. Remember, they got Andre Williams in the fourth round last season. He was a Heisman Trophy candidate. So running backs don't tend to go too early. There should be a talented running back as you get to the middle rounds. In terms of the free agent class that I'm looking over right now, you know, DeMarco Murray, we don't even know if he's going to be on the market, so it's really too early to speculate. No Sean Moreno has battled injuries during the course of his season. Ryan Matthews has battled injuries during the course of his career. Mark Ingram is also a guy that's dealt with some injuries. The laundry
list
is, I think.
You want Ray Rice?
Unreal. Ray Rice, off the field issues as well, so you need to take that into consideration. I'll tell you, Justin Forsett's an interesting name. The problem with Justin Forsett, the resume, the small sample size of him being a starter, may not be enough to sell other teams that if we go after him, he can handle the load.
It's a good question. I don't know.
But if he came to the Giants, remember, this is just a hypothetical situation. There's no rumors, no nothing connected to them and Justin Forsett. He could be a guy that I could see handling 10 to 15 carries a game and be a nice compliment to maybe a Jennings or an Andre Williams.
It's to me, if I bring in a running back, whether it's in the draft or in free agency, and Nick, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. What you want to do is bring in a guy that compliments Jennings and Williams well. So I want kind of that quick game-breaking speedster type of guy that can, you know, I know Jennings is good on third down in terms of receiving and blocking, but maybe a guy with a little bit more explosion, you know, that can be like that David Wilson type where you can make a big play anytime he touches the ball. Now, I think Shane Vereen is a great receiver out of the backfield, you know, not super explosive. I think C.J. Spiller fits that description particularly well, but he's probably going to cost
history,
a little bit too much money, and he also has injury problems as well.
Yeah.
But there are a number of guys in the draft, too, like Duke Johnson, the kid out of Miami, who has a lot of ability to run. He's 5'9", 206, very, very fast, big play type of guy. That's the type of running back I'm looking for. I think Jennings and Williams can handle the between-the-tackle stuff fine, one or the other. If you can bring in a third-down back that can be that, like, fast, change-of-pace guy, that's what I'm looking for.
Well, based on your criteria, the guy I would pinpoint, Antoine Smith, who was with the Falcons
last year, he's actually an ideal guy.
And, John, you don't really have to break open the piggy bank.
Or even Jacquizz Rogers. That works,
correct,
too.
Those two complements. They both from the same system.
Sure.
And the fact that the Falcons are now changing their coaching staff, perhaps they have a different philosophy, these guys will be available. So those two names, I think, are good targets. Like you said, you want to bring maybe a little bit more versatility on third down. Not a guy that's going to have to carry the load, be that big back, but somebody that can provide a change of pace. Antoine Smith, Jacquizz Rogers fit that type of criteria.
Marco in Connecticut is next at 201-939-4513. What's up, Marco?
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, Marco?
Doing well, Marco.
Guys, I think that the just what you were just saying now about the running backs here, I think the pieces are in place on offense for us. You can fill in, just like some of the names you were rattling off on offense with the running back, you could fill in those gaps in the late rounds of the draft or even in free agency. Like you said, Jason Avant, that's a great name. Those running back names, they're not going to cost a lot. And the last few years, the draft, especially early on, has been devoted to offense. I think we flipped the script a little bit here. And you're going to hear a lot about this, John, I think, when you get out to Indianapolis, about how many impact defensive players there are here that could possibly go in the top 10.
Sure. No question.
We need an impact player on defense. I'm saying defensive tackle or defensive end. If we franchise JPP, or possibly the team decides not to, and God forbid they lose him this year, or they do franchise him and then next year he leaves, I think you have to protect yourself a little bit there, not knowing what's going to happen. I mean, you hope he's around. But I think defensive end is just I think that could be a position at number 9 that they're really looking at. And it allows Spags Steve Spagnuolo to have the pieces to do what he likes to do best.
Yeah, Marco, I don't think it has to be a defensive end, though. I think you can bring in a defensive tackle that can be disruptive up the middle, and more importantly, do a good job stopping the run, something the team really struggled at last year, too.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. Hey, guys, I wanted to get your opinion on this guy. Have you had a chance to watch any video on this linebacker from Washington, Shaq Thompson?
You know what? I haven't watched a ton of video on him, but I've actually done a lot of work reading about what people are saying about him. And a couple things jump out at me, Marco. One, he's small. At one point, a scout showed up in Washington, and I think he was like 219 pounds or something like that late in the year, so he had trouble keeping weight on. It gets to the point where Mike Mayock actually projects him to be a safety, not a linebacker. So I would worry about Shaq Thompson, and if you're going to draft him, you have to play him outside. He does not have the ability to play middle linebacker in the NFL simply because of his size.
I don't even think it's Mayock. I don't mean to interrupt, Marco. I think it's just about everybody that's actually been projecting him as a safety. I don't even see him much listed at other positions, given the fact that he has a uniqueness to his size.
Well, and I think that I agree. His preference, from what I've read, is that it is outside linebacker. And then when Mayock projected him as a safety, I mean, he's played running back, too. He's played safety. He's played linebacker. So I'm just interested in him because I think maybe not, certainly not a number nine, and maybe doesn't fit what we're trying to do. But I think if he fits in with the right defense somewhere, and he will in the league, I think he's a weapon that someone's going to figure out to use pretty well.
I agree, and I think you can figure out a way to use him. But you're not going to pick a guy and look. You said it too, and I agree with you. You're not going to pick a guy at nine that you have to figure out what you're going to do with him. So the guy I'm picking at nine, I want a guy where I know I'm going to play him, I can plug him in, and he's going to do the job. It's not someone I'm going to mess around with, move around, and try to figure things out with. I need a guaranteed, as much as any guy you draft is a guaranteed sure thing. I need a very, very high floor for the guy I'm picking at number nine.
That there's a definitive role for that player as opposed to a tweener who, you know, is stuck between multiple positions. And I'll use Devon Kennard as an example. I mean, he had experience in multiple positions, but even somebody like that, the Giants were able to get in the later rounds. You don't see a lot of those type of players go early in the draft.
Hey, guys, just one last thing, and then I'll hang up. Last year, we heard all about Ebron, Zach Martin, Taylor Lewan, and I believe Beckham was not talked about a lot until very, very late.
The last two weeks.
I'm interested, especially after the combine, when the guys are having people on, these draft gurus, who they're projecting, and then you know, we'll figure out maybe who comes on late here.
Oh, no question. Marco, thanks for the call, man. What these guys are predicting with the Giants going to take now means zero. Absolutely nothing. Zero. Nada. Zilch. Nothing. Do you know why?
Do you have a few more synonyms that you'd like to throw out?
I ran out.
Oh, you ran out. Okay.
Zippo?
Maybe like you may be adding a few letters on, but
do you know French for nothing? I know
no, I can't
zero.
Say
you
I
got nothing.
I do know that.
Come on, no.
Niet, how about that?
Oh, yeah,
Russian.
Good job.
Go. Right.
Well done.
How about that?
Good job.
There we go. That's my contribution to today's program.
Well done.
Okay. I'll pat myself on the back.
And I totally forgot where I was going. Now,
you were talking about the fluctuation in draft stock.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
From now till 3 years from now.
Because the scouts and everything have done work on these guys as individuals. So they have their individual reports. The coaches now in the offseason have begun to look at these players. Jerry Reese is evaluating them. Mark Ross is evaluating them.
Guys, don't forget that.
Yes.
Look at the research in front. I mean, listen, don't let this guy, you know, undersell himself. Anyway, continue.
So these guys haven't even – I'm just going to ignore that. These guys haven't even gotten into a room together yet.
Yes.
And compared their notes and even come close to putting together a board in terms of value. That doesn't happen until April. So we have a month and a half now before the Giants even come together as a group and say, well, let's talk about these guys in the first round, this group of guys in the second round, this group of guys in the third round. We're not even close to being there yet. So nobody has a clue. Do you know what these predictions are? They're guesses.
Absolutely.
That's all
it's chatter. That's what it is.
Listen,
we're in the heart of the NFL offseason. Somebody's got to talk about something, so everybody throws out their projections now. And when you meet him one-on-one, meaning an individual prospect, something that is said in the interview could change your perspective of a player. Some of the testing that goes on at the combine may change your perspective of a player. That's why, you know, it's nice to talk about and speculate now, but this is so premature in the process because things are going to go up and down over the course of the next few weeks. And free agency is going to change the perception of draft picks and where they're going to go, because who uses the franchise tag on who, how much depth you have at one position. Remember, free agency starts in March. Draft is not until later on, so that's going to dictate the tone of the draft.
Last year, Everyone would have thought the Giants would have maybe been in the market for a cornerback in the draft, right? And what happens? You sign Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, and all of a sudden, guess what? You're not drafted a cornerback, especially not in the first couple rounds.
Walter, Walter Thurman, too. Yeah.
No question about it.
It changes the outlook.
No doubt. 201-939-4513. Chris in Bayonne, New Jersey. Chris, you're up next.
How you doing, guys?
What's up, Chris?
Doing well, Chris. How's everything with you? What you got?
I can't complain. $13 million under the cap. I think it's now $14 million with Jenkins redoing his contract.
From the numbers I've seen online, and again, the Giants don't announce these numbers, so this is just based on what people have on the internet, it looks like it's around 19.
All right, even $19 million. It makes my argument even better.
Okay, what's that?
We always talk about how we spend the Giants' money. Let the Giants spend their money. We need an impact player in the free agency. I'm tired of these bargain guys. They're nice to have. Take them from guard, put them to tackle. These are all nice guys. But you still need an impact guy.
Okay, okay. No, I hear you.
Bench ball needs a cleanup back.
No, Chris, I hear you. But hold on 1 second now. Even if they have $19 million under the cap, you need about $5 million of that for draft picks, right? And then you want to franchise Jason Pierre-Paul? Guess what? There's all your money.
Rookie money is a separate entity, John. Come on.
No, it comes out of the cap.
All right, so it comes out of the cap. So now we signed 21 free agencies last year. We're only going to probably keep about six of them that are decent players and are good players. So now we have, like, how many left over? At the end of the season, we're not going to go as deep a free agency as we did last year. Of course they're not. They're still probably going to go for 10, 11 guys, I bet.
Sure. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, but they could be complimentary players. You don't necessarily have to go for the home run in free agency every offseason.
No, what home run have we gone in the offseason, Lance?
Dominic Rodgers.
But define home run. What is your classification? Is it money or is it notoriety
could be
of a player?
Could be a Bryant, could be a Murray. Just to give you an example.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's a home run to me.
Well, Chris, in fairness, they spent a lot of money on Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. They spent a lot of money on Ancho Roll. They spent a lot of money on Chris Canty. They spent a lot of money on Michael Boley. They spent a decent amount of money. Maybe it's not upper echelon money, but they spent good money on Jeff Schwartz. They spent good money on Rashad Jennings.
They re-signed Beeson
to a good contract.
I'm not arguing. Listen, guys, I'm not arguing those players. I thought they were all great pickups, okay? I think Schwartz and Jenkins probably, out of all of those you listed, are probably two impact guys. The unfortunate thing is Schwartz got hurt. He's our run guy, right?
Well, ideally, you would like Schwartz to help in the run game. That's correct.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, now my last point, and then I'll move on.
Sure.
I agree with you. There's about five defensive tackles out there. Okay, we can probably pick up one. That's my priority. Wide receivers in the top 40, 50 guys, there's about four good wide receivers out there, too. Safety thing. Go ahead, John.
No. I was going to say, people are saying that you could probably have in the first three rounds of this draft upwards of 15 to 17 wide receivers go. It's a pretty deep wide receiver class.
Yeah, because we get a 9, a 40-something, and a 74 in the first three picks.
Yep.
We got to get three. We have to get three starters at least, or at least a third rounder at least has to contribute. You agree?
Well, you want to strike gold in terms of the draft. If you look at what they did last season, they got a number of starters out of the draft. So, of course, build off of what they did last season. I can't necessarily give you a number, but you want depth in this year's draft
and Chris,
to answer your question.
Jerry Reese has said before that you would like to get in your first three rounds picks, three guys that can come in and start first three rounds.
And they're saying, like, a lot of these defensive tackles and defensive ends, this class, they, you know the word freak? They use them as freak. There's a lot of freak, meaning monster guys, kind of, coming out of this draft. And this kid Armstead, what is he all about? Was he 6'9", 290, or 6'7", 290?
The offensive lineman you're talking about?
No, the defensive end.
Oh, the DN. I'm sorry. I got the guys mixed up there. Yeah, Armstead's I worry about the guys that come in with that type of size. Arik Armstead's the Oregon kid. He's 6'7", 296. He doesn't have great production in college. A lot of people think he's going to be kind of that Chris Canty 3-4 defensive end swing tackle type of thing, in the NFL. But they love his athleticism. He's actually going to – he's one of those guys, I think, Armstead, that's going to show up at the combine, do really well on these drills, Chris, and he's going to shoot up draft boards a little bit because he's a great athlete. But from what I understand, his production in college wasn't exactly off the charts.
So he's a project kind of player.
I'm not sure if I would necessarily label him a project. I think – let me put it this way. I think you're right in that you need your NFL coaches to coach him up to meet his athletic potential.
Yes, that's my point.
Correct. I agree.
And the kid Thompson, Shaq, okay, the linebacker, I've been watching the boards and listening to the internet. He's really moved out of the first round into the second already. He's moving down rather than moving up, this kid. You guys are absolutely right with this guy.
All right. Appreciate the call, Chris.
Thank you, guys. Are you sure? I enjoyed the show. Bye.
Thank you, man.
All right, Chris,
I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And it's funny. He's moved into the second round. What? Nothing's happened now at the end of the football
happened.
Season.
And they're going to move again.
And I'm not making fun of Chris. He's right. I've heard the same thing. But why is he moving around? Nothing's changed. He's the same guy. Why is he moving?
Well, they looked at the film from a different angle, apparently, and they changed their opinion on that. You know what's going to happen. Or they talked to another scout or an expert who looked at him a little bit closer.
It's all about... Yeah. Blah, 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 well, rumors and hearsay.
Correct.
That's all it's based on.
And don't overlook the fact that, listen, agents are involved. You know, the PR machine is at work. You know, this is how you help your clients stock. You get the media to do sometimes the heavy lifting. So that also can sway influence when it comes to evaluating these prospects.
201-939-4513. Nana is down in Georgia. What's going on, Nana?
Hey, guys.
How are you?
How are we doing, Nana?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Great. We're great.
Okay. I wanted to talk about first, I saw everybody saying we need to get a receiver and all of that. I don't think that's something we should even try doing from round one to round three, because I feel like we have a lot on our roster already. And I wanted to know, do you guys think that maybe Corey Washington will get a bigger role in the offense coming season?
Nah, look, he'll be given the opportunity in the offseason program and spring practice and in training camp to earn that role. And he has to play better when fans aren't looking in order to earn his way onto the field in the regular season. He'll have the opportunity. Whether or not he's going to be able to do it, I honestly don't know. Lance doesn't know. I think he has some of the raw skills to do it, but he has to put it all together.
Okay, but I wouldn't mind if we went offensive line with our number 9 pick, because I was listening to what you guys were saying earlier, and y'all was talking about there was a guy who was being compared to Zach Martin, and to me, I feel like he's the one that helped turn around the offensive line for the Dallas Cowboys, so why not try to bring that one guy in the early round, you know, to come in and gel everything together.
Now, I want to just caution you in giving Zach Martin all the credit for helping Dallas, because, look, Tyron Smith, who was a first-round pick, is 1 year older, 1 year better. Travis Frederick, who was a rookie the previous year, was 1 year older, 1 year better. And, yeah, Zach Martin had a huge impact, so I'm not trying to say he didn't. But to expect a rookie to come in and turn the whole thing around sometimes can be dangerous. You don't want to put that much weight and that much pressure on a rookie coming in. And, you know, maybe Brandon Scherff would have that effect. Who knows? But I'd be wary of putting that much on one kid's shoulders to turn the whole thing around. But, look, he's a very talented player. You need a blue-collar road grader type on this offensive line in that regard. I think he would be a big help. I think he's pretty pro-ready. He's strong. He's a guy that's coming from a pro program under Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, who knows the pro system. It's not going to be a huge adjustment for him. But I think, again, if you wait until the draft, Nana, you risk putting yourself into a bind. Because what if Scherff's off the board? Then you're sitting there at 9, you didn't do anything in free agency, and then what are you going to do, reach for another offensive lineman? That's when you start getting into some trouble, you know what I mean?
Okay, I mean, I understand that. I'm not saying don't address any offensive lineman in free agency.
That's fair.
Because, of course, that wouldn't make any sense. But my thing is, I still feel like even if we got something in the in free agency, I still wouldn't mind if we went, if that same guy or somebody is close to, good how he is, is available, when we pick, I wouldn't mind it, you know, because that's really our, you know, besides that safety, I feel like that's one of our big needs, and we all see how they were dropping like flies the last couple of years. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't mind that. And then I also want to talk about JPP. I hear that there's, sources saying that we're going to do the franchise tag on him. I have mixed feelings when it comes to him, so I feel like that's too much money for 1 year. And then also I feel like I don't know if you want to lock him to a full-time deal, I mean a full, you know, 4 or 5 year contract, because he's too up and down. I mean, he's not a consistent player.
Well, part of that, Nana, has been like he's that. Had to deal with some injuries during the course of his career. And you're right, his sack totals have struggled, or have gone up and down, I should say, but he's been excellent against the run. That's been one area that he's been extremely consistent in, and you can't overlook that. You need those pass rushers to be able to stop the run. So I think he has value in that department. And, you know, based on the speculation that's been out there, and it's only speculation, as John and I emphasized off the beginning of the show, Nana, even if the Giants were to use the franchise tag on JPP, that means they're giving him the franchise tag in the window in which you designate a player. 3 weeks after that, they could very well hammer out a long-term deal. So, you know, when a player is given a franchise tag, that doesn't mean he's going to play at that number come the start of the season. A lot of things can change after you give him that tag.
But, Nana, you make a good point. Jerry Reese did say after the year they needed JPP to be a lot more productive the first half of the year, and that's the risk. And I think that's what the Giants and JPP are going to have to balance here. Are you paying for the guy in the last 6 or 7 games of the year, or are you paying for the guy that played in the first 8, 9, or 10? And that's what the Giants need to figure out. And that's why this is no slam dunk, and why it's going to be a negotiation. They're going to have to work at it, and they're going to have to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly, because there's no need to break the bank for him because he's not a consistent player. So I think they're just going to have to, like, meet in the middle, you know, because he's not worth that top-dollar defensive end type of deal because he's not consistent, you know. And then also I want to say one more thing. I really do feel like we do need to bring in another running back. And like you said, it doesn't have to be in the early rounds because Andre Williams came in at 4 and still did good. But I feel like the reason why we need to bring in another one is because Jennings, we don't know if he's going to be able to stay healthy, you know. So we need to bring somebody in just in case he goes down. Because, you know, when both of them are on the field together, they do real good. But I just don't think that Williams is a back who needs to carry the load if what's-his-name isn't staying healthy, if Rashad Jennings isn't staying healthy. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Nana.
I appreciate the phone call. You look at the Giants when they've had a great deal of success on the ground, John. It's always been when they've had compliments. They like to rely on 2 or 3 running backs. So to answer the question, or at least the thought that Nana was throwing out, I think the Giants definitely want to have some additional depth at the running back position. They don't necessarily have to bring in a guy who's going to come in and be a legitimate starter. You want balance, but you also want a player that doesn't necessarily have a track record of getting hurt all the time. And it's a position where there's a great deal of turnover because that position takes so many hits during the course of a game and during the course of a season, but you still want a guy that you can rely on. Because remember, heading into this season, the Giants envisioned the perfect complement: Rashad Jennings and Andre Williams. And obviously they would have hoped that David Wilson didn't necessarily have to retire prematurely. And in an ideal world, hey, you got some versatility there, you have some dynamics. Little by little, guys got hurt, so the vision didn't come to fruition. But the goal is, if you can have 3 or 4 backs, this way you preserve them for the course of the season.
The vision didn't come to fruition. I like it. That was a Walt Clyde Frazier style phrasing, right? That was very good.
Toying some words. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. We try to make a statement here each and every program. That was the statement.
And there are some, and I think there are some guys in the draft that meet her criteria. If you want to pick somebody in like the 3rd round, you know, there are guys. Amir Abdul is a guy out of Nebraska, 5'8", 198. He's a guy that's a little smaller, probably can't carry the load himself, but he can be a complimentary guy. I mentioned Duke Johnson at Miami, another guy that's probably not the guy that's going to run 20 times a game. People have compared him to C.J. Spiller, that type of explosive running back. And, you know, there are other guys later on, too.
I was going to point out Tevin Coleman is another one.
To me, he's an every down guy.
He is an every down
guy.
He's
a carry, though. I love
him. But if he falls, you should at least consider it.
Tevin Coleman, to me, is probably the 3rd best running back in this draft after Gordon and Gurley. I think Gordon and Gurley would be my first 2 backs off the board, even with Gurley's injury. I'd pick him in round 2, not 1. I pick him in the second round.
Because of the upside.
And my third guy off the board would be Tevin Coleman. I love Tevin Coleman. He is good.
He's not that third change of pace type of back that we talked about.
If he's sitting there around three, sign me up. I'm there.
Consider it. Absolutely.
I'm with you. But that's my point. I mean, I'm looking at 1, 3, 5, 10, 12 guys that could go in the first three rounds here. I mean, there are a lot of running backs here that are going to be on the board and be guys that can come in and help and start and play a big role right away that's going to help your team in 2015.
But will there be a run on running backs? I think that's the bigger question, John. If you look at the last few years, there hasn't been a run, at least in the early rounds. There's been, you know, some that have gone maybe middle of the second round, but very few teams take chances on running backs in the first round.
No, and I think the only guy that could go in the first round this year is probably Gordon. I could see one team maybe at the very end of the first round saying, you know, Todd Gurley, maybe he's worth the risk here if we think he could be in, you know, a quote-unquote Adrian Peterson type of running back. You know, maybe, but other than those two guys, I don't think anybody else is even close to being a first
round. I mean, I'll tell you, there's one team to me that jumps out, which I could see perhaps going in the first round for a running back, and that would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the reason I say that, when Le'Veon Bell went down in the playoffs, they noticed that they didn't have a great deal of depth, especially with LeGarrette Blount leaving for New England, and there's speculation that Bell could be facing a two-game suspension, potentially, for some of his off-the-field issues. I could see maybe Pittsburgh going that route. Outside of that, I'd be surprised if any other team tries to be aggressive in terms of drafting a running back.
Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but I've seen some projections in which people have Dallas going running back in the first round if they don't bring DeMarco Murray back because of Joseph Randle's off-the-field issues. I don't think that's where they're going to go because, like you said, running backs are not valued like they used to be, but I have seen some people look in that direction with the Cowboys in the first round.
It would make sense from a personnel standpoint. Right. I think the Cowboys put a lot more value in their offensive line, and they figure we can get away with whoever in the backfield.
You plug and play a little bit.
Correct, as opposed to needing the heavy lifter. But you're right. If things change with Murray, that could certainly change which direction they want to go.
All right, folks, we got 8 minutes. We got four calls. Let's get him in. Let's get him be quick, fellas. Dante in New Jersey is first. Dante, what's going on?
Hey, how y'all guys doing?
Hi, Dante.
Doing well, Dante.
I was wondering, what role will Ruben play next year? And, like, I know the slot position is, like, needed because Victor Cruz might not come back fully healthy. So I was wondering, what route would they go with that? And what would they do in the draft?
Well, Beckham and Cruz can both play the slot. That's the good thing. You saw Beckham play the slot a decent amount, even when he played the last 6 or 7 games and played extremely well. Ruben Randle right now is going to be the second or third receiver, depending on the health of Victor Cruz. I think he showed at the end of the season he's certainly good enough to be a number three, and he showed flashes in the last few games that maybe he can be that legitimate number two heading into next year. As for the draft, I think it's wait and see. I mean, we can't jump to conclusions here, Lance. We talked about it. Free agency affects the draft. And we don't even know what the Giants have done in free agency yet. To predict who the Giants are going to take, Dante, I think it's a little premature.
So with the ninth pick in the draft, do you think there's any kind of way that Leonard Williams will slide that far?
No.
Okay.
I mean, he's probably going to be the first or second pick in the draft. He's not getting a 9.
That may be wishful thinking on your part.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
No problem,
no
Dante.
Problem. You got it.
See, sometimes I like to be short-directed to the point.
Listen, there's nothing much more to add to that.
It's like last year. Is Jadeveon Clowney going to be there at 12?
Yeah.
Nope.
No.
Not.
You'd like to hear him drop, but it's not going to happen. Correct.
No, the Giants, based on their first seasons, got a much better player.
Absolutely.
And that shows where you're drafting doesn't necessarily matter all that much. You just got to find the right guy in the right spot.
Well, I could say the same thing about free agency, John. A lot of people are calling up, and we were talking about, quote-unquote, a home run player. If you look at the teams that are ultra-aggressive in free agency, that very rarely translates to a championship on the field. So you also need to take that into consideration. Let's just think about, real quickly, teams that were extremely aggressive. And the Giants were, but I wouldn't necessarily put them where, like, the Denver Broncos last offseason. I mean, they went out. They got big name after big name.
They had a good year, though.
T.J. Ward, DeMarcus Ware, they did. But that doesn't mean that you automatically get the Lombardi Trophy,
well,
I guess
Redskins,
is what I'm saying.
Traditionally,
the
have
Redskins
been very
have
aggressive.
Been a team that have been extremely aggressive. Dallas had done that in the past, and now with the limited flexibility, they pulled back. So they went the route of the draft, and the Giants are obviously going the route of the draft more and more they've been doing well in terms of depth, at least last season.
With the franchise tag, though, you don't see these top players leaving anymore. I mean, the only reason a Dominican Sue is going to probably end up leaving is because he had that clause in his contract where his franchise number this year is something like $28 million or something ridiculous like that, where they can't franchise him. That's why you don't see these big-time players in their prime leave anymore, because if teams don't want them, they can keep them. That's why the franchise tag's there.
Well, they changed the rules, too, within the franchise, like you said, because they don't want teams to lose their star players. They want to keep a balanced playing field. That's what's great about the NFL. There's so much parity where you can win two games one year, and then you can be back in the mix for a title the next year.
I mean, Aqib Talib is another guy that you mentioned that went to Denver. Corners tend to be one of the guys that leave and go other places. We've seen a couple safeties sign big contracts. Deshaun Goldston signed a big contract. Trying to think. DeSean Jackson went to the Redskins. That was a big wide receiver deal. Trying to think of other big free agent signings of the last few years. That was big, big, big money. Albert Haynesworth, obviously, back in the day we talked about him.
Some offensive linemen have also changed teams.
Yeah.
Last year there was somewhat of a run in terms of the offensive line. You've seen a few guys change.
Knicks,
so, the you
big,
know, that could be.
Knicks went left Tampa. That was the big one.
Carl Knicks.
You had Hutchinson leave Seattle and go to the Minnesota.
That was a few years ago.
That was probably back in like 05 or 06, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, yeah, there have been some big signings, big guys that have left. But, you know, that's more often than not financially based and talent based. That's why if teams manage their cap right and they have players they want to keep, they're going to be able to keep them. Now, that's why the franchise tag is there. 201-939-4513. Leonard's in Maryland. Hello, Leonard.
Good morning, guys.
How
are
you, buddy? I'm doing
morning,
well.
Morning, Len. How's everything with you?
Good. Good, good. Impact players, when you're coming off 7-9 and 6-10, impact players are in the draft, not in free agency.
More, well, I think no matter what your record is, that's the case.
Well, okay. But I think it's especially true when you're coming off 6-10 and 7-9. Let me talk draft for a second. And as you guys mentioned earlier in the show, certainly the combine is going to change things, and then free agency will change things, pro days will change things, and before you know it, in the last 2 weeks is when you really start firming up what the list is, you know, going to be, who the best players are.
But absolutely.
Let me take a stab at this right now. At number nine, I see the three offensive linemen and the defensive end Fowler as guys who most likely are going to be there. And I'm okay with that. I think we can find an impact player, impact next year, at number nine if those four guys are there. Certainly at six, certainly at 7-9, 6-10, I'm not signing anybody over age 30 to a free agent contract. which brings me to Colin Jenkins, who has been a solid Giant for us and has worked hard. So this is not a criticism of Jenkins, but if you're looking at the depth chart right now, where do you place Jenkins?
Well, right now he's a starter next to Jonathan Hankins based on who's on the roster.
This has got to be the only business in the whole world where you can tell a guy you're going to rehire him next year to do the same job that he was doing last year, but you're going to cut his salary. I tell you, I've never been able to figure out and understand the business of football.
Len, I will say
I'm
this, though, too.
Naive. I'm probably too naive for that.
Len, I will say this, though, too. They're not going to hand him the starting job now. They're going to give Jay Bromley a chance to compete. Yeah. If they bring in other young players, they're going to compete with Colin Jenkins. I think it's fair to, you know, put
he's the favorite coming in. I mean, you could at least classify
him as that.
Seriously, I guess here's my point is about Jenkins. If he's just competing with those guys for a slot, I think we should have released Colin.
Well, you know what, though? Again, the Giants haven't said anything, but if the reports are right, the number they got him down to is a very, very reasonable number. So, I know.
I think it is, too. I mean, it's a reasonable number, but I can't. John, I know I used you as an example before, but if the Giants came to you and said, look, we're going to ask you to do the same job next year, but we're going to cut your salary by a quarter, I mean, it doesn't. Like I say, pro football is the only business where it seems where you can do this.
Len,
and ask the guy to come back and do the same job.
Len, it is unique, and I understand where you're going. You also need to also put in perspective where Colin Jenkins is at this stage in his career. He may be very comfortable with the organization.
And what would the market be for him?
Correct. So maybe money is not necessarily the driving force. And once again, that's pure speculation. If we're talking about a guy who has an expiring rookie deal, yeah, that would be unusual. He probably wants to strike big in the open market. Colin Jenkins has been around in the league for for quite some time. He may be very comfortable here, and he's fine with whatever he and the team have discussed.
Yeah, Len, you know what? If you want to make a comparison, actually, this is like the guy that's 58 years old, working at the Fortune 500 company, that has a big bloated six-figure salary that the company says, well, you know what? If we're going to cut somebody, we're going to cut this guy. So the old-timer says, rather than getting fired and nobody else wants to hire a 59-year-old, he's going to say, you know what? Instead of making 200 grand, I'll make 150 grand for 4 or 5 more years so I can keep my job. Because if they fire me, guess what? I'm not getting anything.
With all due respect to Colin Jenkins, and I'm sorry that we have to talk names here, that I'm talking names, really. With all due respect to Colin, we don't move off of 6 and 10 with Colin Jenkins starting a defensive tackle. I mean,
well, at the end of the day, though,
it's not going to happen, guys.
At the end of the day, Len, we have no idea what the complete roster is going to look like when training camp ends. So, I mean, it's one thing to say that now. We may be singing a different tune in a few months. So, I understand you're looking at it just now, but the roster's going to change. I mean, that happens every offseason.
And there's no guarantee that Jenkins will be starting a defensive tackle, and we don't even know that.
True. All of that is true. I'm just saying I'm mystified by the direction that they went with Colin. And let's keep building this offense. You know, that offensive line, protect your biggest asset, which is Eli. We did it last year, but we did it with a wide receiver in Beckham. I mean, there's many ways in which we can protect Eli. Let's get another offensive lineman. 5 guys who we look at who can carry us the 3 or 4 years of Eli's tenure. 5 guys together to carry us forward. I don't think that's Pugh moving the guard. I think we got to find somebody there. That's either Collins or Scherf. I hope one or the other are available at number 9. Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you, Len. Great to hear from you, pal.
Appreciate it.
No doubt.
He's just referring to, by the way, Lyle Collins, the offensive lineman out of LSU. That's who Len at least was touching on, that last name.
And a lot of people do like him, by the way, as a mid-first-round pick, I think, where he's kind of looking at right now at the combine. We'll see if he jumps up any higher.
Just real quickly, John, though, not as much versatility, though, as a guy like Scherf. That's at least important to note.
Collins is a tackle.
Correct. And he is expected to stick at that spot. Whereas Scherf, there's the door that's open to perhaps, like Zach Martin, move him around a little.
Though Collins could be a right tackle. People aren't sure if he projects better as right or left. So, and there is a different skill set, too, playing right tackle, playing left tackle. All right, we're already over, folks. We're 2 minutes over, so we got 2 calls they've been holding. I want to get to them. Let's go to Mike in Oakland, California first. He's got the long-distance call. Get him out of the way first. Mike, what do you got?
Hey, I'll be quick.
Yeah.
First thing, I want to talk about JPP and just say, you know, he's an impact player. You know, he's been coming off injuries, but I think he's shown what he can do, and you don't get a lot of other guys like that in free agent, and it's a crapshoot in the draft. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney is number 1 pick, and he has not produced anything yet. Maybe not his fault, but it's the truth.
Yep.
So JPP is a stud, and he showed a lot to me in the game against the Redskins when he came all the way across the field, made that diving play, and forced the fumble by,
Robert Griffin III.
Griffin. I mean, just for me, one of the things I look at for players that I admire and went on the roster is whether or not they quit on the play and what their motor is. And that just said a lot to me about where he's at.
No, Mike, I agree. Mike, and I think that play did speak volumes, but you'd like to see that motor more consistently over 16 games.
I agree. And, I listened to a lot of his interviews and everything else, and, you know, a lot of players play with injury, don't really talk about him to the end of the season. It sounds like the player we were seeing at the end of the season is where he thought he was physically back. So, you know, my 2 cents is, if you got to franchise him, let's keep him. I don't think we come up with another similarly impactful player.
That's fair.
On the outside.
I think that's fair.
So,
yeah.
Cool. The other thing I wanted to ask you guys, just 2 more things. One is Brandon Scherf. Like, I've been looking at film of all of these offensive linemen that are coming up in the draft, and like Scherf just seems to me like heads and shoulders above everybody else. The way he finishes plays, his strength. I mean, I'm seeing these other guys get knocked around. I'm not seeing that guy take a step backward ever.
No. Look, I agree. I think he's your safest guy, and you know, safest isn't always best, but you know, he's got an NFL body. He, like I said, he came from a pro system. He's very strong. You know, is he a crazy athlete where he's got the best feet in the world, where, you know, he's going to be a left tackle for 10 years? I'm not sure he's going to be that guy. But I think he's a guy that can anchor your running game for 10 years, and I think that's a big thing.
Well, and I'll add, Mike, to what John just said from the video that I've seen. I actually think he has a little quickness to him. I've seen him run up the field,
which is
you know, not something that you see too many offensive linemen do consistently.
I'm not saying he's a bad athlete, but I also don't think he's like your classic, you know, Tyron Smith left tackle where he's super agile. Now, he played left tackle at Iowa, so he's got
great
feet.
Yeah.
But I think strength – and let me put it this way. When you break down his strengths, I think – strength and power is a bigger strength for him than agility. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Yeah.
He certainly doesn't get pushed back, and he gets to that second layer quite often.
He does. He does.
You really see penetration on his part.
He never stops, yeah, man. The guy finishes every single snap, and I love that about him. So the other thing I just want to quick –
yeah, real quick, Mike.
Okay, so when we get back, I think we're going to have a great defensive backfield, and we get – when our guys come back from injury – if guys got to hold the ball an extra couple seconds they didn't have to do last year, you know, maybe Cullen Jenkins gets home a couple more times. I think it changes how our line performs.
That's a good point.
And then, but the thing I really wanted to talk about is Jaquan Williams with those two concussions kept him out of 6-7 games last year. You know, I've always been pulling for him. I know he stays after and does the hard work, but I think he's a real question. And I always see him chasing after plays instead of anticipating and making plays. So the speed doesn't matter as much when you're always chasing. So I think outside linebacker is really one of our biggest needs. And I just wanted to hear you guys say about, yeah, do you see him chasing instead of making the play? And, you know, how do we prioritize a good OLB? And thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, Mike. In terms of outside linebacker, saying that that is probably the most imperative move that the Giants need to make, Devon Kennard, I think, got a lot of experience in year number one. Very interested to see how Spags utilizes him. That, to me, is the one player to watch.
But where do you go
Spags'
after
new
him?
System.
That's the trick.
After him on the outside, perhaps because of injuries and depth, but I don't know if outside linebacker is as big of a question mark as some of these other positions, given there could be a lot more turnover at other positions, I guess is what I'm getting
well,
at.
Well, let's broaden it a little bit. Let's talk about the linebacker position in general. How much of a need for you, Lance, is bringing in a young middle linebacker that can be there in case Beeson can't stay healthy again?
I think it's a need, absolutely. For depth purposes, it's an absolute need. I would not go the route of free agency just because you're concerned with injury, but if you could develop a young guy who can learn from the Beesons and the McLeans of the world, I think that's going to help you down the road.
Yeah,
so I would certainly consider that.
I think it's imperative to add a young building block linebacker at some point here, whether it's at Sam or, well, however you want to classify Kennard playing Sam or Will. To me, he's more of a Sam. Whether it's at weak side or middle, I think you have to bring in a building block player here because, look, next year, if McLean's one of your three starters and your third best linebacker that's on the field, I think that's great. I think you're fine. I think he did a great job filling in for Beeson last year. He's a leader. He's a veteran. He provides all that sort of
and
stuff.
He can play multiple
but
positions.
He's also, you know, it's last year of his contract. He's getting up there in age a little bit. He's been in the league a long time. You want to start developing younger players. So I think if you can develop a younger player that can pair with Kennard for years to come, I think that's where you go. Whether it's a middle linebacker or a guy that can play outside, I would like to bring in one of those guys, whether it's a young free agent or a guy in the draft you develop. I think that's a direction you can certainly go in. And that was a guy I think the Giants tried to do last year when O'Brien Schofield was a player they tried to bring in, but he couldn't get, you know, he didn't pass his physical. That was the type. He was like a 25-year-old guy. You can play him outside. You can rush the passer a little bit. That type of guy you can bring in to develop along with Kennard to keep getting that linebacker position a little bit younger.
Well, and that gets back to why Seattle's had such good success over the last few years, John, the fact that they continue to draft, so when their starters do leave, they have guys that they can sort of pluck in, and I think O'Brien Schofield is one of those guys in that department who actually played a pretty good role in their Super Bowl run this year.
He did, no question about it. Lance, this was fun, my friend.
Absolutely.
And Lance will be with us again a couple times next couple of weeks. I'm going to try to do a show tomorrow, guys. I'm not sure how it's going to work. I will be in transit. We're tearing down all our equipment to get the road trip ready tomorrow. I'm going to see if I can leave back enough where we can actually stream the show tomorrow. Might be audio only, but we'll try to get it done one way or the other. Otherwise, we'll be at the Combine on Thursday and Friday. We'll have a number of live guests. We'll talk to Giants scouts. We will talk to a bunch of draft experts. I've already talked to Rob Rang. I've talked to Dane Brugler. I've talked to Matt Miller. I've talked to Tony Pauline. We'll try to get some NFL insiders on over the course of the weekend as well. The Mike Garafolos of the world. We got Peter King last year. So we'll see who we can get on. We got Bill Polian on last year. See if we can get some of those type of guys on there that are covering the draft and get them on Giants.com as well. Lance, enjoy. You'll hold down the fort here while we're in Indy.
Will do. Yes,
you have any good advice?
Not. Do I have any good advice?
Yeah, for Indianapolis.
For Indianapolis? You've been to Indianapolis more than I have. What am I giving you advice for?
Maybe wish a fun trip or something.
Oh, yes, have a fun trip. Okay, we wish you well. That. Yes.
We'll leave Lance
here. Make sure you bring back the equipment back
demand.
In one piece. How about that? That's my well
wishes.
All right,
thank you. It's always all about you, isn't it?
Absolutely. We want to make sure that the show can run when you get back.
Excellent. Everybody, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on Thursday from Indianapolis. See you later.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get some fun?